Morning. Today's Daf Baba Basra is Mem Dalet. We are starting today on Mem Gimel Mid Beis. We're going to start Tana Rabbanan, and we're going to start towards the top of the Amud. It's really second half of yesterday's Daf, but the truth of the matter is that it's one run-on sentence. The sentence starts with the words Tana Rabbanan on yesterday's Daf, and it will continue through today's Daf. So it's one flow. We did the Braisa yesterday. We're going to start the Braisa again. Machlo Bais, Machlo Sada. Braisa starts off with me selling a house, me selling a field, basically a property of real estate. So ain't made lo Allah. So I can't testify about it in circumstances which we're going to identify what exactly that is, but I can't testify about it. And the Braisa gives a very succinct explanation, because the responsibility is upon me. Okay, now, there's a simple explanation that Braisa, but you gotta look at the Braisa in its totality. Machlo par, machlo talis, but if I sell a cow, if I sell some article of clothing, made lo Allah, then I can't testify about it, mimnei she'in achriyaso Allah, because the achriyas is not upon me. Okay, now, basically, what it sounds like from the Braisa is that the whole distinction to be made between real estate and immovables is that by real estate, since I have achrayus, since I have responsibility, so therefore I'm not allowed to testify about it. This is consistent with what we saw yesterday regarding the idea of Nogei Bedavar. Yesterday's daf was really a dedication of Nogei Bedavar. The entire Amud Aleph was dedicated to the topic of Nogei Bedavar. So we are continuing now discussing the idea of Nogei Bedavar. I can't testify about something that I have a vested interest in. And that means that if I sell somebody something and for whatever reason, which we haven't even articulated yet, but I need to testify about it, well, if I have a vested interest in it, and if I have a financial gain in testifying about it, so then I can't, because my financial gain that I have is going to create a partiality, not an impartiality, a partiality where there's a chance that I won't tell the truth, because money does that to people. But if it's something that I have no direct benefit from, so then I'd be allowed to testify about it, because then I could be impartial. So at this point in time, that seems to be the very simple pshat in the Braisa, but the Gemara is bothered by the question of what is the fundamental difference between movables and real estate, meaning, and one you're going to be holding responsible, and the other one you're not going to be holding responsible. It's kind of arbitrary, and this is really what bothers the Gemara. The Gemara doesn't articulate this point, but it's kind of arbitrary, meaning that, look, I sell you a property, and the property's taken away from you from whoever claims they are the rightful owner. And not only do they claim it, but they prove it. So the property's taken away from you. So I have to make good on that which I sold you, because what I sold you wasn't mine to sell. The truth of the matter is that there's no difference between real estate and movables, right? I sell you a cow. It turns out the cow wasn't mine to sell. Turns out I was a thief. Now, you come after me and you say to me, okay, I paid you good money for that cow. You got to reimburse me. And he's right. I do have to reimburse him. So the truth of the matter is that although I understand that, we all understand that if you have a vested interest, then you can't testify about something. If you don't have a vested interest, then you can't testify about something. But the truth of the matter is, it's somewhat arbitrary that we're making some sort of basic fundamental distinction between movables and property, where truth be told, that in both cases, if I sold something that I was not entitled to sell, and now the buyer comes after me and says to me, okay, reimburse me, don't have to reimburse them in both cases? And what really lies, what makes the difference between property and movables?
The code, no? Because property has a code, people should be aware. Well,
yeah, but you're, I understand that, and we're going to head in your direction, but you're talking about a shibud, meaning in the case of the Braisa over here, at its simplest level, we're not talking about a shibud, we're talking about I sell you something, and then I had no right to sell it. So shouldn't he be entitled to reimbursement? The answer is yes, he should be. Of course he's entitled to reimbursement. When I spend money on something that, truth of the matter is that he never was entitled to sell me, so I should get reimbursed in both cases. So the truth of the matter is that although we kind of understand the distinction, but there's no real fundamental groundwork in order to create such a distinction, and that prompts the Gemara to ask the question, Maishna Reisha, Maishna Seifa. What's the difference between the Reisha and the Seifa?
The land, you know, is the land.
No, but in the case of the watch, though, in other words, I bought a watch, and then somebody claims—not just claims, by the way—but proves that the watch was never the seller's to sell.
You're not 100% sure that watch.
That doesn't.
With land, you can't argue about land. That's
okay, but land, again, just look at it from the relationship between buyer and seller. Okay, you don't have to complicate it right now at this point in time. You don't have to complicate it with anything else. Just look at the buyer and seller. Okay, buyer sold seller something. somebody comes over, sorry, sorry. I just heard myself. Seller sells buyer something, and now somebody comes along and proves that that item was not up for sale because it was my item. However we got to that point. So fine, so now I take it away from the buyer. Can't the buyer go back to the seller and say, hey, right? You sold me something and it wasn't yours. He should get a reimbursement. It's fair. So that's what the Gemara's question is. Maishna Reisha, Maishna Seifa. So really, when I think about it a little bit more, what's the difference between the two cases? Yeah.
If you owe somebody money, and can they claw back in Palpalin? Or
nope.
Claw back property?
Nope. That's coming up later this morning. No, the answer is no. In other words, there are movables are, yes. Yeah, but again, you're talking about from the Shibud standpoint. You're talking about in terms of creation of a lien. Right now, the way the Brisa presents itself, with my Brisa is talking about a sale. And it seemingly is talking about the relationship between a buyer and seller. Right. Okay, you're extending it now to the question of a lien. But we're not talking about a lien right now. We're just talking about the relationship between the buyer and the seller. So, Maishan Reisha, Maishan Seifa. So, Amar of Shesha. So, here we go. So, we're going to give now one explanation, and one explanation is going to be a little bit complicated. Complicated only because there's just a lot of moving parts. It's not that complicated. Just a lot of people can get involved in this. I'm Maishan Reisha, Maishan Seifa. Amar of Shesha. Reisha, Beruven, Shigazel, Sadam, Ishimon. Umachel, Levi. Okay, so there are going to be four participants in this case. We start with Reuven. Reuven's a thief. Reuven stole a property from Shimon. And then Reuven turns around and sells it to Levi. And also Yehuda become Ma'aria. Now Yehuda comes along and he challenges. Yehuda says that really the truth of the matter is that he was the original owner. Okay, so there are two people right now in the story who claim that they're actually the original owner. In other words, Shimon right now is the first one to claim that he's an exile. He's actually the one who was stolen from. He's the victim. And Reuven took the land from Shimon. At least this is Shimon's claim. And Reuven turned around and sold it to Levi. And Yehuda now comes along and Yehuda says, what is Shimon talking about? He is the original owner. Right? Is Shimon out of his mind? I'm the original owner. And Yehuda right now claims to be the original owner. Vikama Arir. And he's now laying a challenge, a protest, and he's basically saying, all this is nonsense because I'm the original owner. Okay, so now what do we have? Four people involved in this case. Reuven sold the land to Levi. Reuven's the thief. Reuven stole it from Shimon. Shimon's now making the claim that he's an exile, he's the victim. And all this gets complicated because Yehuda says, well, I'm the original owner. And now, Lo lezo Shimon, lahasid leila Levi. So here's what Shimon cannot do. Shimon cannot go and testify on behalf of Levi. Shimon very much would like the property to stay by Levi. Shimon would not want the property to go back to Yehuda for reasons we're going to explain in just a moment. Okay, so Shimon cannot, meaning that's the point the Bryce is making. Now, in terms of the contrast, what the difference is between property and movables, please hold. Meaning we're going to come back to that later on. For our purposes right now, let's just understand with the first case of the Brisa. So Shimon cannot testify on behalf of Levi and say, Levi bought it, and Levi bought it legitimately. Shimon can't do that. Why? Denichalei dahaja. Because eventually Shimon's got a game plan. And his game plan is that if it gets out of Levi's hands, I'm never going to recover it. Again, for reasons which we're going to explain in just a moment. And I want the land to stay by Levi so that eventually, ultimately, I'm going to be able to get it back. They came into Asilei de Levi who, Hechimati Mapik Leminei. So, the Gemara says, oh, wait one second. Sounds like a bad strategy. Sounds like a bad game plan. Meaning, what Shimon is now trying to do is he's going to go to court and he's going to testify that really the truth of the matter is this property belongs to Levi. I'm testifying. In other words, he's not claiming, he's serving as a witness, or at least he's trying to. I'm going to testify. Now, obviously, by the way, in this entire discussion, you need two people to testify and he's going to be one of the two. Okay, just to make that point as clear as possible. But I'm testifying, says Shimon, that this land belongs to Levi. The Gemara is saying, what a strange strategy. If Shimon's going to testify that the land belongs to Levi, then at a later point in time, he's going to go to court and say, now I want that land back, the land belongs to me. And we're going to all look at Shimon and we're going to say, Shimon, are you out of your mind? Right? Remember? Well, let's go over court record. Court record indicates that. You testify that the land belongs to Levi and now you're going to claim that you're really the original owner? Then that's strange. Shimon, please. get a grip. They came into Asid Leila Levi, Hechi Matli Mapik Leminei. That's the Gemara's question. Well, it's a strange strategy, and if he's testifying on behalf of Levi, how can he later then claim that the land belongs to him? The Amar Yadana Dahai Ara Dalav Dihudihi. So what he's going to come to court and testify is not that the land actually belongs to Levi, but what he's going to do is he's going to deny Yehuda's claim. Yehuda, remember, who came in out of left field and protested and challenged and said, no, I'm the original owner. So all Shimon is going to do is not positively identify Levi as being the owner of the land, but what he's going to do is he's going to block Yehuda's claim. How is he blocking such a claim? The Rashbam over here gives a couple of suggestions. One says the Rashbam, I'm in the Rashbam, three quarters of the way down. Dibur Amaschol Mishani Dama Yadana Duhu Aralav Yehudahi. The Rashbam writes, the Pasalei Yehuda Begazlanusa, meaning Yehuda is saying that he's the original owner. Obviously, he's bringing witnesses. So what Levi's going to do is he's going to disqualify Yehuda's witnesses. That's one way to block it. Another way, says the Rashbam, Oh, the Machish Latan Rasav Vishum Inyan Baolam. Or let's say whatever the claims are, he denies the claims of Yehuda somehow. Kigon Shemei Bifnei Odalo. He could simply say that, you know, in a private conversation, Yehuda admitted to me that he's not really the owner. Okay. Somehow, Levi's going to block Yehuda's claim that he's the owner, either by disqualifying his witnesses or by revealing a private conversation that they had. Okay. Now, Uvahu Zechusa, the Gemara now, so where do we stand right now? So Levi, who was the victim, in other words, the land was stolen from him by Reuven. Reuven then turned around and sold the land to Levi. So what we're now learning in the Braisa is that Levi can't testify. Sorry. Shimon cannot testify. I told you, a lot of moving parts. Shimon can't testify on behalf of Levi if in the event that Yehuda is now challenging Levi. For reasons we haven't articulated why he's doing it yet, what's the game strategy? But in terms of the prudency of the game strategy, so the Gemara says, well, you see, what Shimon is doing is he's not actually saying that the land belongs to Levi, he's just simply blocking Yehuda's claim. And the way he did it is we already gave a couple of examples in the Rashba. And what the Bryce is telling us is that Shimon can't do all this. That's what the Bryce is telling us. The Gemara still says, but I wonder. From Shimon's standpoint, really what difference does it make? Levi has the land. Yehuda gets the land. What difference does it make? Remember, Shimon's claim is that he was the owner. It was stolen by Reuven. So, obviously, he's going to marshal an evidence to this point. He can't just simply make a claim. That's not going to help him. He's going to bring in evidence. Whatever evidence he has to wrangle the land out of the hands of Levi, isn't it going to basically be the same evidence in order to get the hands out of the to get the land out of the hands of Yehuda? Like the Gemara says, what's that? So the Gemara says to Amar, well, the Gemara says Hasheni Noach Lo Arishon Kashi Himenu, using an expression that we saw earlier in our perek. The Gemara says, well, yeah. In other words, some people are just easier and some people are harder. And, you know, right, correct. In other words, by holding the land in Levi's hands, he's now selecting his opponent, what he feels to be a weaker opponent than that of Yehuda. Once the land gets into the hands of Yehuda, he kind of knows he doesn't have a shot. Yehuda's lawyers are the best. Okay, I'm embellishing over here. You know, you'll forgive my poetic license, but he's not going to get the hands out of Yehuda. He has a chance of getting the hands out of Levi. Okay. Now, with all that stated, now here's all we've done so far. All we've done is construct a scenario in which we now understand the first part of the braisa. We still don't even understand the contrast, the difference between land versus real land and movables. We're going to come back to that point in a moment. I mean, the whole reason why, let's get this straight. The whole reason why we're constructing this scenario is so that there is going to be a difference between land and movables, and we're going to come back to that in just a moment. But so far, all we've done is we constructed the scenario. So again, just to review. Shimon was the original owner of the land. The land was then stolen by Reuven, sold to Levi. And what the Bryce is telling us is that Shimon, you cannot testify on behalf of Levi, basically having him hold that land so that eventually you'll be able to take away the land from Levi. Well, why would he be testifying on behalf of Levi? Because out of nowhere comes this Yehuda character, and he says that the land really belongs to him, so he can't testify on behalf of Levi. Now, Here comes the part where, in other words, again, we still have a lot of work to do in terms of clarifying all this, but here comes the part where you have to go back to the Braisa, and now you understand what the Braisa is saying. Let's read the Braisa again. I'm just going back and I'm just reading the Braisa again. Machalo abayis machalo sadeh. So we're talking about the sale in the context of our case now, the sale of Reuven selling the land to Levi, Reuven the thief selling land to Levi. So he can't testify that he's a reference to Shimon. Shimon can't testify. Mimnesha achriyaso alav. Now what does that mean in this case? In the constructed case that we now have, what do the words mean, Mimnesha achriyaso alav? It is not what it normally means. Achrayos normally has something to do with a guarantee, where in the event that it's taken away, I'm going to pay you. In the case that we're discussing right now, that's not what it means. What does it mean? Achrayos over here means acharito, meaning I got an end game. Shimon's got an end game over here. His end game is to get the land away from Levi. So he's testifying on behalf of Levi, so that achriyaso, meaning in the end, he'll be able to take the land away from Levi. That's what achriyaso means in this braisa. The Gemara later on will make the comment, that's not normally what it means. Meaning that is definitely an unusual way, I'm being nice in my language, that's an unusual way to explain the word achriyaso in the braisa. That's not normally what the word does in a braisa. So, that's just, I'm putting it on the table right now. That's how we're understanding the Braisa right now. And now we continue in the Gemara. Ebay Zema, three lines from the bottom on Mem Gimel Med Beis. Or the Gemara says, again, we're just explaining what's his end game. In other words, what's his strategy? Testify on behalf of Levi so that the hand land doesn't get to Yehuda. So the Gemara says another way to explain why he's doing that is Kegon di Isle Sahadi Lamar, Visle Sahadi Lamar, the Amrabanan Ara Hechadekaima Tekun. So the Gemara says another possibility is that, look, he knows that if the land gets to Yehuda, he knows Yehuda has witnesses. And Yehuda's evidence that the land belongs to him. Now, Shimon also has evidence. But if Yehuda does get the land, if he allows that to happen, so basically, here's Yehuda with the land and evidence. There's Shimon with just evidence. So we have now evidence against evidence. Where's the land right now currently in Yehuda's possession, if he does get his hands on it? And so if I have evidence, which knock each other out, so then the only thing left as the determining factor is chazaka. So that's why, from Shimon's standpoint, I never want the land to get to Yehuda, because I know that once it gets to him, so then we're going to be locked in a stalemate, but which is only going to be decided by chazaka, which he will have if he gets the land. Okay. Is all that so far so good? Meaning, so we have now a case. Now again, the reason why we have this case over here is so that we can now make a contrast between the first case in the Braisa and the second case in the Braisa. What is the difference? So I'll speak it out now. I mean, it'll become clear in the Gemara as well, but let me say it outside right now. The Rashbam does, in the course of his parish, give this explanation. The difference is as follows. You see, in the cases now we have, so Reuven sold the land to Levi. Again, Reuven's the thief. Now Shimon, at one point in time, we're going to assume, knowing that the land belonged to him, meaning he's the victim, he's the nigzal, said, oh, you know what, I'm never going to give up, I'm never going to get that land back. Meaning Shimon at one point in time articulated Yeush, I'm never getting it back. Now, when it comes to land, here's the good news for Shimon. Yeush doesn't do anything. In other words, when it comes to karka, ain karka nigzelis. It's a rule that we see time and again throughout Shas. Land cannot be stolen. Now, what does that mean, land can't be stolen? I could throw you out of your land, but in other words, I'm never labeled a gazlan. The land itself is never labeled as an item which is stolen. So although I forcefully kick you out of your land, and you even may voice despair in Yeush, I'm never getting it back, here's the good news, it never really changed possessions. So karka ain't an exelus, which means now that your Yeush is inconsequential. It means that the shinui rishus, when Reuven sells it to Levi, that too is going to be inconsequential, and you always have a chance of getting it back. Contrast that now with movables. With movables now, an item is stolen from you and you declare Yeyush, and then the item gets stolen, you will not get the item back. The two ingredients of Yeyush and Shina Rishus means that once you have the spare and once the item is sold from the thief to a buyer, then you do not get the item back. And that is the difference between karka and movables. And now, with all that stated, now we understand the difference between the first half of the Braisa and the second half of the Braisa. In the first half of the Braisa, Shimon can't testify because there is a chance that he can get that land back. And because there's a chance, now he has a vested interest, and with that vested interest, now he can't testify because he's now no longer partial. When it comes to movables, even though he was the victim, but he's never getting the item back. There was Shinui, start in the right order. There was Yeyush, he despaired that he was going to get it back, and it was sold from Reuven to Levi, so now he's not going to get the item back. So now, it certainly will be a bitter pill to swallow, but now he can testify about the item, saying that the item really belongs to Levi, and we will assume now that he doesn't have partiality, because he's never going to be able to get the item back. That's the Gemara saying is the difference between the Reisha and the Seifa, and there you have it. Vilukma. Now on the top of Memdala and Aleph, the Gemara says Begazlan. So the Gemara says over here, was it necessary to introduce all these characters in the scenario? We have four people involved. Shimon, the original owner, Reuven the thief, Reuven sells it to Levi, and then Yehuda comes in along and challenges. What's going on over here? Why does the case need to be so complicated if all we're doing is just trying to articulate one singular point, the difference between land and movables? The Gemara says, can't we just simply deal with the Goslin? No. Meaning that the Goslin took it, and now, if we're talking about land, you can't testify about it. If we're talking about movables, you can't testify about it. So the Gemara says, no, we need the sale. The sale is an important ingredient. The Gemara goes on to explain. Mishum de kabayla misnei seifa machlo par machlo talis. You see, because the Braisa wanted to contrast the difference between land and movables. The dafka machada havala yesh v'shina rishus. You see, with the sale, now we have both ingredients. We have yesh and we have shina rishus. Avala machada hajalei lo lo. So, but if it was that without the sale and all you have is yesh, now the Rashbam admits, yes, it's true. The Gemara in Baba Kama does have a debate whether yesh by itself creates a kinyan or not. But we're going to assume, for the purpose of our discussion, that yesh by itself does not create a kinyan. So even though you had despair, if there was no sale, so then you're going to be able to get it back. Once you're able to get it back, then you can't testify about it. You certainly can claim, but you can't testify, because you have partiality. So that's why we need the sale. The sale creates yesh and shina rishus. So tanaresha nami mecher v'sefer. Tanaresha nami mecher. That's why the resha also deals with a mecher, because we need both yesh and we need shina rishus. Okay, v'sefer. So the Gemara says, okay, so we now do have a case. Remember, this entire pshat is brought to us by Rav Sheshes. So now Rav Sheshes does give us a pshat in the Braisa, the difference between the Reisha and the Seifa. And the Reisha, you're not allowed to testify because you have an end game in sight, which is to get the land back. And you could get the land back because by land, it's not Nigzal, and therefore, even though you had Yeyush, the Yeyush and the Shina Rishus does not separate the land from you. You have a chance of getting it back. That's why you cannot testify about it. Masha Enkin, in the case of the movables, where even if you had an end game, Sahelfnish, it's not going to help you. You can't get the item back. There was Yeish, there was Shini Rishus, you're not going to get the item back. The Gemara still challenges the Pshat of Rav Sheshes. V'seifanami, dihidi miyayish megufe, midameh mi miyayish. The Gemara says, look, I understand that you're not going to get back the item itself. Aren't you going to go get back its value? Meaning, there was a thief. He stole from you. Now, he fenced the item. Right? He sold it off to somebody else. Okay, so you're not going to get the item back. There was Yesh and there was Shina Rishos. But if you were to testify and prove that this man was a thief, so of course you're going to get a reimbursement, meaning the thief is going to have to pay you. So once it's established that the thief in fact took it from you, so you're going to get paid back. You're not getting the item back, but you're going to get its value back. And if you're getting back its value, aren't we back now to square one? Aren't we now back to the point that you now are partial? So the Gemara says, L'chsricha demis gazlan. So the Gemara says, okay, that's a very good point, And the Gemara says that we're going to have to introduce one more factor. And that is that the Gazlan sold the item and the Gazlan died. And as we learned back in Baba Kama, when somebody steals an item from you and then he dies, although the Gazlan, had he been alive, would have to have returned the item, and if the item wasn't there, he'd have to return the value of the item. That obligation generally does not fall down to the children. Now, yes, we discussed back in Baba Kama that under certain circumstances, the children do have an obligation to pay back the thief, notably if the father did tshuva. So then there's an idea of kibud av va'em, that in order to honor your parents, so you should return the item. But that's only if your mother or father did tshuva before they died. Otherwise, the child has no obligation to return the item, as we learned back in Baba Kama. And the Gemara actually quotes the Mishnah of Baba Kama. Hagozel machos banav inech lefneim peturim elishalim. So if a thief stole and fed his children, or died and left for them the stolen items, so they do not have an obligation to return it under normal circumstances. So now we fleshed it all out, and admittedly it's complicated. So just to quickly recap, Shimon was the original owner of the land. Reuven stole the land from Shimon. Reuven sold it to Levi. Yehuda comes now and challenges, and he says that he is the actual original owner of the land. Shimon can't testify on behalf of the land. Why not? Because Shimon has an eventuality of getting that land back, and because of that, he now is partial, he's no Geba Dover, and therefore he can't testify. However, if I took the entire scenario, and instead of land, we're talking about movables, so then Shimon would be allowed to testify. Why? Because Reuven stole the item from Shimon, Reuven sold it to Levi, now Yehuda comes and challenges that he's the original owner, now Shimon has the right to testify. Why? Because there's no way he's going to get back the item. He's not going to get back the item itself, because there's Shiersh and there's Shina Rishos, and he's not even going to get a reimbursement. Why not? Because we're talking only about a case where the Gazlan died, and the children don't have an obligation to reimburse. Okay. The Lukma B'Yarish, the Gemara says, okay, once we introduce the Yarish into the scenario, the Gemara says, you know what, we could have streamlined and simplified the case a little bit better by just talking about the Yarish. So meaning, for example, thief stole it, he died, leaving the item with the children. And now, the difference could still be made between karka and movables. By karka, the karka is going to get returned back to the original owner. By movables, the item is not going to be returned to the original owner. So the Gemara says, not everyone's in agreement with that point. Hanich laman da'amer rishus yarish lav kirishus lokeach dami shaper. El laman da'amer rishus yarish kirishus lokeach dami maik lamemar. So the Gemara says, again, another debate that we saw back in Baba Kama, and we're reviewing right now, and that is, when you have a transfer of inheritance from the father to the son, how is that viewed halachically? Is it viewed as a continuous ownership, just simply passed from father to son, or halachically is it viewed as a lakicha, as a transfer? Is it viewed as a sale? Now, in the world of Gzela, that makes a very, very big difference. Because remember, what creates a kinyan? Yesh and Shina Rishus. If the transfer of inheritance is viewed as a continuum, so then that's not considered Shina Rishus. And all you have then is Yesh. If it's viewed as it's like halakhically a sale, so then you have Yesh and you have Shina Rishus. So the Gemara says, yes, the Yarish by itself could have introduced this distinction, but that's only if you subscribe to the idea that Rishus Yarish is not considered like a Lokeach. But once you say that Rishus Yarish is considered like a Lokeach, so then it's the same thing, and then it's not going to make a difference. So Michael Amemar. V'od kashya leila Abaye. And then Abaye says, this entire pshat that was just offered by Rav Sheshes, meaning we just finished now a full sentence of Gemara. Granted, it's almost two pages, meaning it's yesterday's Amud Beis and today's Amud Aleph, but we just finished a sentence where we saw Braisa, and we have now given Rav Sheshes' pshat in the Braisa. Now Abaye says, the pshat's fine. It works in terms of functionally. We see the difference between land and movables, and why it is that Shimon can not testify about land, but can testify about movables in the scenario that Rav Sheshes just laid out. All that's true. But textually speaking, it doesn't work in the Braisa. Because the Braisa says the word achrayos, and you, Rav Sheshet, how are you understanding it? It doesn't mean guarantee. It means that Shimon has an end game in sight. The Gemara says, Kashile la abaye, mimnesha achriyoso alav, ve'en achriyoso alav. What language is being used in the Braisa? The language of achrayos, mimnesha chozeres lo, ve'en chozeres lo mibayilei. According to Ryu Rav Sheshet, achrayos is just simply a misplaced term. That's not the term that should be used in the Braisa, but rather, the term should be chozeres. Shimon's going after his land. That's why he's testifying about it. Shimon's not going after the movable item. He can't. Yesh and Shina Rishus. That's why he's allowed to testify about it. The word Choseres would have been a much more appropriate word in the Braisa if Rav Sheshet, your pshat in the Braisa, would have been correct. And so now, basically, after having gone through an intricate pshat in the Braisa according to Rav Sheshet. Now, by the way, Rashbam points out over here, and in general, it's such a good point to realize. Meaning, although we're scratching this entire pshat in the Braisa, every point we made is correct. Meaning, everything we said halachically is sound. It just happens to be that this is not the right pshat in the Braisa. But, right, first of all, it's Torah, we didn't waste any of our time. And secondly, in addition to it being Torah, it's also valid. All the points we made were valid, just simply not good pshat in the Braisa. So yes, we are now ejecting from Rav Sheshet's pshat, but still, everything we said was correct. So, Elikud Ravim Bar Shmuel, the Amar Ravim Bar Shmuel, Mishmei Deshmuel. So the Gemara now is going to offer now a second shot in the Braisa, and that is as follows. If I sell land to my friend, and I do so with no guarantee. Okay? So basically, I'm selling my land to, Reuven sells land to Shimon. Now here it's going to be a lot easier, because there are only two people involved in this. Well, there's going to be a third, but Reuven sells land to Shimon, and Reuven says, look, Shimon, I'm selling you the land, but understand, in the event that any one of my creditors take the land away from you, so that's going to be your risk, and that's going to be your loss, and you have no recourse against me. And you could do that. In other words, you can make such a sale of property. So, ein meyit lo aleha mibnei shema'amida bifnei ba'chava. An idea that we just saw yesterday, that we're reiterating today, Reuven now can no longer testify about this land. Even though he is not going to be personally financially on the hook for this land, but nevertheless he can't testify about it. Why? Because out comes one of his creditors, takes the land away from Shimon, and now if Reuven needs to testify about it, he's going to be personally invested in doing so. Why? Because if for whatever reason he doesn't testify about it and his creditors can't take the land away, so he'll be defaulting not once now but a second time against the creditor, and that's very poor against his reputation. Credit score goes down, his reputation is really hurt, so therefore he has a vested interest. Now it's not the kind of vested interest where he has a direct financial gain, but still the idea of defaulting on a loan and putting him now in poor credit standing and having a poor reputation, that's hurtful. So therefore, he would want to testify that the land really did belong to him and the creditor really is entitled to the land and it will rehabilitate his credit standing. Now, the Rashbam does point out over here, although his creditors are happy, how about the buyer? Right? In other words, the buyer is not happy, but the Rashbam points out, it's true the buyer is not happy, but the buyer assumed the risk. So, yes, the buyer is not happy with Reuven, and probably at the next Shabbos Kiddush, I'm not recommending it, and I'm not condoning it, but Shimon's going to say, you know what, be careful when you buy from Reuven. I'm just telling you, I had a bad experience. All that's true, but In fairness to Reuven, Shimon did assume the risk. Shimon knew that he was buying the property with no recourse, and so that the from Reuven's standpoint, the idea that his creditors get paid off, that's important to him. That's significant.
How does he testify?
In other words, the case would have to. In other words, the case would still have to get a little more complicated, meaning that the creditor comes and takes the land, and along comes somebody and says, you know, that land doesn't belong to Reuven, and now Reuven has to testify and say, no, the land did actually belong to me, and my creditor does have the right to take it as satisfaction of the obligation.
Okay.
Okay. So, yeah, yes. Even in this pshat, I said it's a little bit more, it's a little more streamlined. There still needs to be a number of other people involved in order for him to have to testify. Right. Right, exactly. Very good. Right, there's still a Yehuda. That's very good. Okay, Vidavka, okay. Now, again, this is already a better pshat in the Braisa because we have the word achrayus and we have the word achrayus as it's classically used. Achrayus over here means a guarantee. So already, the pshat's better. But what we still need to do is that we need to make a distinction between property and movables. Because remember, that's the whole point of the Braisa, is that there's a difference between property and movables. Vidavka bayis asada. So, we are saying that this is specifically true to a house or to a field of apar vitalis lo. So, I'm sorry, of apar vitalis. So, now, what if I sell a cow? What if I sell an article of clothing? Lomi baye bistama de lo mishtab delay. So the Gemara says, now look, generally speaking, there's no sheba that it creates. Meaning no creditor of Reuven can come and take can take sold articles of clothing, sold cows. Meaning there's simply no lien on the movable items. My tama matatlan inu matatlay labachov la mishtabde. The Gemara gives us one of the most basic rules regarding liens. Liens do not attach themselves to movables. Liens only attach themselves to property. And parenthetically, it's not parenthetical, and the reason why that's true, as the Rashbam here points out on the top of the Amud, is because when it comes to property, property are sold, and generally speaking, it's on public record. The people know that property are sold. So basically, you can say to the buyer, look, you should have known. Or in other words, it was on public record that this person borrowed money, and the person had a creditor, and the creditor had a lien, and so therefore there's a coal. The sale of property is on public record, the loans are on public record, so you should have known. In other words, then you were expected to do your due diligence, and buyer beware. But when you're talking about the sale of movable items, so there we can't expect the buyers to know that there was a lien attached to the movable items, and therefore there's no lien that attaches to movable items. So the Gemara says, "My time, I'm a tata ninu, a tata labachov la mishtabe." The Alpha gav de kasa la miglima da katfe, and the Gemara says, and you know, in those notes, in those loan documents, it does say that the creditor is entitled to take whatever he can get his hands on. He can, if it's land, it be it land, and even afil glima da katfe. Now that language should sound familiar. Every time you go to a chasna and you hear the ksuva get read, so you hear that kind of language, and I'm not trying to minimize it. By the way, of course, it's very significant. Meaning, basically, the creditor can take even the shirt off your back. That's true, but not if you sold the shirt. Meaning, there's no lien that attaches to the shirt. So if you are currently in holding of the shirt, so then yeah, the creditor can take it. But if you sold the shirt, so then it's over. There's no lien that attaches to it. So, Hani Miladis no Beinayu. The Gemara makes exactly this point. Yeah, if the shirt's on your hands, then the creditor can take it. Avalesna Beinayu lo. But once the shirt is sold, so then the creditor can't take it. So the Gemara says, oh, that's true. But we're going to go even one step further. Ala afilu asu apotiki nami lo. Even if, when you borrowed your money, you said to the creditor, look, I know you're a little bit nervous, and so here's what we're going to do. All my property, of course there's a lien attached to my property. Oh, what bothers you right now? I don't have property? I don't have property? Okay, I understand that bothers you right now, but look, what we'll do is I will create a lien against my movables. And what we'll do is we'll make an apotiki. An apotiki is basically a designated lien. It's what we do nowadays when we borrow to buy our houses. Meaning we don't say to the bank, you can take any property you want of mine. No, in other words, the bank places a lien directly on the house that you're borrowing against. And that's basically what an apotiki is. An apotiki is, we're going to identify the item that they were going to attach a lien. And so what we're doing now is, instead of identifying a land, because in this case, he doesn't have any land, so he's identifying a cow or article of clothing, a nice article of clothing, which will serve as security against the loan. So the Gemara says, so that's what we're describing over here. Afilasu apotiki nami lo. And that's a chiddush. that even if the item that was sold was designated as an apotiki, still, once the item is sold, that's it. The creditor can no longer come and take it. Now, why should that be? It's gone. So the Gemara says, "Wait, just one second. Let me just get through the language of the Gemara." So the Gemara says, "Potiki, no, my time. Why? If a person were to make his eved, meaning eved kanani, in a potiki, and then he would sell it, so the baal chov can come and collect from it. Why? We say time and again, right? An eved kanani has the halachic status of karka, and just like there's a lien against karka, so too there will be an outstanding lien and a continuing lien that is held, that is connected with the eved kanani. And so therefore, wherever the eved kanani goes, that shibud goes together with him. And therefore, that will be collectible even after it's sold. However, shor v'chamor apotiki. However, if you attach an apotiki to your shor, to your chamor, umachro, ein bal chov goveimenu. So then the baal chov does not go ahead and collect my time, and the difference is ha'is laikala v'ha'les laikala. Because even in its sale, when you sell an eved kanani, it's done generally speaking in auction, and it's done generally speaking public, and therefore it is known, and therefore we could say to the buyer, beware, you should have known that there was, that this item was sold from a person who had outstanding loans, and he had a creditor, and there's a chance that this eved kanani with an apotiki attached to it is going to be taken by its creditor, and therefore buyer beware. And we're going to tell there's an expectation that the buyer should know about it, and therefore in the event that the creditor wants to collect his loan, he can take the eved kanani. However, when it comes to other movable items, we don't expect the buyer to know it, and therefore it can be taken away. It cannot be taken away from him, even if it's stamped and labeled as an apotiki.
Once you
sell a movable, even if that movable was stamped, it was earmarked as an apotiki, so that's it. In other words, it is the label, the attached lien is totally dissolved.
So if you borrow money to buy a car, you can't sell the car or pay back to the lien.
Again, you're asking halacha, you're asking what the legalities are here in America.
there is no apotiki on movable property.
Okay. In other words, it's interesting. You say there is or isn't. Meaning, you can make it, but if you sell it, though, the apotiki is gone.
So you can't.
Right. In other words, it won't have any legal effectiveness once you sell it.
It's as an effect from the original owner.
Right. If the creditor accepted it, it was only just to assuage the creditor. But correct. In other words, it's not meaningless if it's still on hand. Meaning, if it's still on hand and the creditor comes and the creditor says, okay, I want to take what's mine. He says, well, I'm cash poor. Okay, I'm sorry to hear that you're cash poor, but we've established that this cow was going to be the apotiki. You still have the apotiki on hand, so I'll take it. So it's not totally meaningless. It will help if the cow is on hand. Once he sells the cow, however, the apotiki's gone. So
the borrower has money somewhere else in place.
The apotiki is just a security.
No, but he has other things, but the creditor cannot go for other things. He just have, because that's
right. In other words, right. Once the apotiki is identified as the apotiki, so then yeah. So then it's first in line to be taken. Okay. The Gemara. Yeah, let's do a little bit more today. So the Gemara says, why don't we concern ourselves with the following? Look, we have now given pshat in the Braisa, and this is Ravin's pshat. And the pshat here is a little bit simpler in that the big difference between land versus movables is that land has a lien, and that lien will continue even after it's sold. And that's why you, the seller, who also happens to be the borrower, cannot testify about it, because that item will be used to satisfy your outstanding obligation. It will be, your creditor will come and collect it. However, when it comes to movables, so there's no lien that attaches itself to movables, and as a result of that, you can testify about it, because it's not going to help you whatsoever. In other words, your creditors can't come and take it. Okay, Gemara says good. Why don't we concern ourselves with the following? The Gemara says, "Velechush." Let's be concerned. Now we know that there's something called the Kinyan Agav. We learned this back in Kedushin, that I can sell movables and property together. I could bundle them together. And the Chiddush of the Gemara Kedushin is that the method of Kinyan for Karka will work with the movables that are sold with the Karka. So for example, if I sell a house and I sell movables in the house, so as long as they do Kesef Shtar or Chazaka on the house, I'm going to acquire the movables as well. Here comes now such a tremendous chiddush, and that is that not only is the method of kinyan going to be the same for both, but just like there's a shibud on the karka, there will also be a bundled shibud on the movables as well. Right? It's a tremendous chiddush. So that, generally speaking, movables don't have a shibud, they don't have a lien attached to them, but when the metaltalin get bundled with karka, they also adopt the same halachic principle of karka, and they will have a lien in them as well. I probably even without, meaning the two. You know, in other words, they're linked.
Right.
The Amar Rabbi Iakne le metatale kama karka kana metarka kana metatale. So. And Rabbi says that when you sell the two together and you bundle the two together, the karka and the movables, so they get sold together. I mean, that doesn't sound like a chiddush, but it's a tremendous chiddush, meaning that where there's going to be there's going to be a lien on the movables since the movables were linked with the karka. The Amar of
the question is how can you testify on the
movables? And then right, in other words, and if that were the case, then he wouldn't be able to testify on the movables as the creditor. Right, the creditor now will take it as collection of the payment, and now he has an interest. The Amar of Chisavu deKasav deLokas Machta deLokutusa deShtarai, and Rav Chisav says, and you have to write that this is not a smachta, and it's not a draft document. In other words, when you write up the loan document, it has to be, when you write up the sale document, it has to be a valid document. But once you do that, there is going to be a shibud even on the metaltalin. So the Gemara says, "Hach ba maiskin kigon shalakach umachar la'altar." So the Gemara says, well, we're talking about a case where he bought the movables and he sold it immediately. So in other words, there was no period in time where he could have sold the movables in conjunction with land. So okay, in other words, basically what the Gemara is answering is, no, that point is a really good point. Meaning, yeah, generally speaking, I would be concerned about the movables being sold with the property, but it happens to be that we know in this particular case that didn't happen. Okay, we'll pause over here. Tomorrow we'll pick it up. Okay, let's quickly recap. The Braisa really got us going for the entirety of today. The Braisa told us that if you sell land, you can't testify about that which you sold. If you sold movables, you are allowed to testify. The Braisa says the difference is achrayus. We have so far today given two pshatim in the Braisa. One is Rav Sheshis and the other is Ravin. Rav Sheshis' pshat is a very intricate pshat having to do with in land, you're testifying about it so that eventually you're going to be able to get it back. By movables, you're not going to be able to get it back. And it's really a function of land. Yesh and Shina Rishus doesn't create a kinyan. By movables, it does. Therefore, by land, you will be able to get it back. By movables, you will not. It's a difficult pshat, as the Gemara ended up by pointing out, that the word achrayus in the Braisa is used in an uncommon way. Then Rabin gives his pshat, and that is that when you sell land and you're selling it with achrayus, now we're using the language here of the Braisa in its normal sense, so then you can't testify about it. And the reason why you'd want to testify about it is so that your creditor can come and recoup the land as satisfaction of the loan. And you will now be a good borrower, having paid back your loan. However, when it comes to movables, there is no lien attached to the movables, and therefore you can testify about it because it's not going to help anyway. Okay, and tomorrow we'll pick it up.